This is Actualize Freedom, straight talk on growing clicks and conversions on Amazon FBA from people doing it every day. Now here's your host, digital marketing acrobat, Danny Kenji Carlson.
What's up, guys? This is Danny Carlson with the Actualize Freedom podcast, and we have here Dave Story, and we're going to be going into some really interesting topics if you're interested in maximizing the saleability and value of your SBA business, as well as a few other very interesting topics. So without further ado, let's dive right into this one. It is pretty much the opposite end of the world. Dave is 11 p.m. I believe right now. I am 6 a.m. So we are across the other side of the world, beaming across satellites and then back down across the other side of the world to bring this interview to you. So welcome to the podcast, Dave.
Thank you, Danny. I'm really glad, pleased to be on your podcast. Sitting here in my pajamas, 11 p.m.
Awesome. That's the greatest thing about Zoom is that no one can tell if you're not wearing pants.
That's right.
So first off, I know that you have a lot of experience when it comes to maximizing the saleability and value of your FBA business. And that's the goal of a lot of Amazon business owners is getting that sale, right? You can get a really good multiple for an Amazon e-commerce business right now. So what are some of your best tips for maximizing the saleability and value?
Absolutely, Danny. I'll tell you a little bit about my story and why I'm so interested in this subject. Is I started Amazon 2014, had massive success early on, and in late 2016, 17, thought, oh, we're going to sell this with my business partner. We're going to sell this. And we went, got a quotation. And at the time, it was worth about $3 million. And we decided to not sell and grow it even bigger because we're having such success. And we just thought, like, rinse and repeat, let's go for it. So we used all our cash pretty much and plowed it in a load of products in 2017. And cut a long story short, lots of things went wrong. And we lost a lot of our money. And in 2018, we went back to get the valuation done again. And the broker said, I'm not even sure whether your business is actually saleable at this point. Not only is it, you know, on a downturn, there's so many things that need to be resolved in it. This was a huge blow for us. And we spent about a year and a half turning the business around. We had to learn exactly what we needed to do to make that business saleable. We eventually went and sold in 2019, late 2019. So my best tips, I suppose, for making that business saleable, you've got to put yourself in the shoes of the buyer. And to do that, you need to understand what a buyer is looking for in your business.
So that experience of you knowing that you should have sold your business in hindsight at an earlier stage, how much more would you have sold your business for if you had sold right then, back when you were cocky and things were going well, as opposed to when you did sell in 2019?
Yeah, we only managed to get in the end $1 million. So we lost $2 million over that period, which is a massive blow. We've done things in the right way that we know what to do now. We could have gone the other way, but as it was, we lost that $2
million. Wow. So it could have sold for $3 million, but it sold for $1
million. Yeah, that's right.
Wow. Yeah, that's a huge difference.
That's a difference. I've decided that I don't want this happening to other Amazon sellers, and I've decided to bring out a training program on exactly what you need to do to maximize the saleability and value of your FBA business. And yeah,
do you think that your old self, back when you could have sold for $3 million, do you think you really could have said anything to yourself to convince yourself to sell? Or were you just going to do that anyways? Were you just like, I mean, for me, if I know something, if I hear something from a book or if someone tells me some advice, I'm probably still going to make that mistake anyways. Do you think that was the case for you back then? You were just going to do it anyways, or in hindsight, do you think that it totally was avoidable and you just should have sold?
No, it was totally avoidable. I think if we knew what we knew now, we would have sold at that point. When we were on that high, that growth curve, which is one of the most important things you can do to get the value, the maximum value of your business. And you never know what's going to happen down the line, and we didn't know what was going to happen in 2017. And I think we would have definitely sold.
Awesome. And so what are the things that you know now? Like, looking back on things, like you know what you know now, what would you have told yourself back in 2017?
I would have looked at the financials of the business in more detail and realized that we'd had such a growth curve. With the resources we had at the time, we pretty much maxed out. To go further, we needed to in that next year, we needed to take on additional staff, VAs, and it becomes a different type of business when you get to that sort of level. And we just weren't geared up, and we didn't, in our heart of hearts, didn't want to go to that level, but we were forced into it. So we should have just sold and built another one and then sold that one.
Yeah, I mean, hindsight is 20/20, right? And so yeah. When it comes to maximizing the sale ability, like, what do you tell people now, like people who reach out to you for advice? What are some things that they can do now to prepare their business to be sellable and maximize the value in case that a good sale opportunity does come along?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to understand what a buyer is looking for in your business. They're looking for this, as I mentioned before, your business to be up on this growth path. That means that when they buy the business, they can continue that growth path forwards. But you can essentially classify what they're looking for in four areas. They're looking at risks. How risky is it for them to buy your business? So they're looking for, obviously, low risk. There's lots of elements that make up that element of risk. Transferability, they're looking for you to transfer the assets of your business across over to them as easy as possible. And there's certain things that you can do to make your business more transferable. And the last one is verifiability. So can they verify the financials? Can they verify the documents in your business? And if they can easily, that's a will count towards the value of your business. Essentially, they're looking to put a multiplier on your seller discretionary earnings, which is made from your profits over a 12-month period, plus any add backs, which are normally your director's salary and other discretionary type ad backs.
Yeah, well, and that's a really valuable experience, because I find that often the best teachers are the people who have made all of the mistakes, right? There's a lot of people right now, I think, I'm not going to name any names, but there's a lot of people in the business education space that they got successful because they got very lucky in a lot of ways. Not to say that they're not smart somehow, but everything just went like really right for them in their very first business ever, and they have just had some success. So they don't really know how to teach what they're doing because they don't understand all the pitfalls. They haven't made those brutal mistakes that a lot of their students are actually going to be making, right? So it's a very interesting point of view to be learning from someone who has made those mistakes.
Yeah, that is so true. I can honestly say that if we hadn't have gone down the path, we hadn't made those mistakes, I would be sitting here and not know half the things that I do. It's been an expensive learning program for me, but the new brand that I've started off is now, I'm building it completely differently, with all these mistakes in mind that we're not going to make this time. And it's very well pointed out.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of expensive learning mistakes because those are the ones that I really internalize. You know, if I make a dumb mistake and it costs me $10,000, I'm going to really internalize that mistake. And that lesson is going to be so much more powerful than something I read in a book. In fact, a lot of those mistakes were things that I read in books, but I just did them anyways. And it wasn't until I lost my own money making that exact same mistake that I really learned it, you know? And also, Dave, I know that you have really good, powerful systems for staying laser focused. And you think that it's the most important thing that you need. And I would agree. It's very difficult in today's world to stay laser focused on the things that actually matter. There's so much noise when you're a business owner, when you're trying to build something online, there's a million different places you could put your attention. And I know personally for me, just spending time to really craft my way of staying focused, I have to do all of this crazy stuff to actually stay focused. And as soon as I go off of this crazy stuff, I get sucked right back into new marketing tactics or even like scrolling Instagram and like really dumb stuff. So I'm really curious to hear, how do you stay laser focused?
Yeah, going back, I've got 20 years experience in manufacturing, and often people in my career when I was in manufacturing used to say, Dave, how do you stay so focused? What's your secret? And it's something that I just learned over time, but what you got to know about being focused or not focused is that it massively, massively improves your chance of meeting any goal that you set in your business. For me, it's the very most important thing that you can possibly have. And in the world today, it's so easy to get distracted by social media and all the things that are going on in your mind. And I've got a 6-step process essentially to keep myself focused. I'll just go over that. I think, yeah,
let's do it. So,
step one, be crystal clear on your why. Be absolutely clear on why you want to do this. Yeah? You got to ask yourself the question, maybe why, maybe 3 to 10 times until you reach your driving motivation. When you get that, write it down. It will be a statement. Put it on your wall and look at it every day. Step two, establish your goal. So you write down your goal statement, whatever that may be. Use it in numbers and put a time scale on it. Be realistic, but aim high. Step three, consider what will happen if you do not meet your goal. Okay? Write this down, put it on your wall every day, and look at it. Step four, create a committed work plan. And when I say committed, I mean that you have to commit to this work plan. So you just create essentially a schedule, have your time blocked out, and make sure that your time plan is worked into this schedule. I would say get up early and start your schedule, and include a break at lunchtime for exercise. I think that's very important. It completely refocuses you for the second part of your day. Step five, clear out your old habits and your distractions. So I do this by, or have done this by, you essentially create a diary of your habits and what your distractions are through the day. Categorize them, good and bad. Focus on the good ones, clear out the bad ones, create more good ones if possible. Step six, follow your plans, avoid distractions. I talked about social media, turn that off. Avoid interruptions and time-wasting activities.
That's pretty bulletproof right there. I really wanted to dive in on a few things that you said right there, especially social media and staying off social media. So this is a big realization that I've had, again, for the second time. I used to do this like 2 years ago, and it worked really, really well, but I've recently re-implemented it, and the results have been night and day. So I don't check any messages or emails or Slack or anything until 12:30. So the middle of the day, and the entire morning is set to focus. So and for me to do this, I literally have an app to block all of those things. I literally can't access them if I wanted to. So the app is called Freedom, and if you're a Windows nerd, you can't even open up Task Manager to like delete this thing off your computer. But it's great because you press the button once on your phone and your computer, and it blocks it across both of them. And it trains me to, like, every time I think of something, I want to go into Messenger, I now have to record that on like a Word document so that I can go send it later. Because what happens is every time I go to send that one email or I go to send that one Messenger message to that person, maybe that's actually legitimately a good business reason to do that. But the problem is you open up the thing and you see there's 20 unread freaking messages, and now you start responding to all those messages, and before you know it, you completely forgot about the reason you went in there in the first place, and it just compounds on itself. Usually once I'm done with Messenger, I just have a loop to open up WhatsApp, and then I go open up Slack, and it's such a crazy distraction. So for me, that's been really powerful. Like, I'm curious to hear how you stay off of social media. Like, do you just have certain times you check it, or how do you handle that?
Yeah, it's very, very tempting. And what happens is you get caught in a habit loop. You can't help it. It's built in your subconscious mind of, I need to check social media. Then once you start checking it, you're getting rewarded from your habit. So you've just got to absolutely block it out and be very, very disciplined in I just put my phone downstairs. It's not even in my office. I don't have any notifications on at all. It might be hard at first. It will be hard at first to get out of a habit. But it takes generally 3 weeks to get you out of this essentially subconscious state that your mind's in, this habit. And then it should become much easier, and you should be able to not have the urge to check your social media.
Yeah, well, and there's one small habit too that I think is really powerful, a way to detox yourself from social media a lot of people don't think about, but it's so funny. Like, I have developed this habit of always taking my phone to the washroom. I go and I take a crap. And it's like, it's insane to me. Like, sometimes I will have left my phone in the other room and I almost get to the washroom, but I'll like stop and then go walk all the way back to like upstairs or something to grab my phone so that I don't go to the washroom without my phone. You know, it's like, it's that ingrained into the habit. And I think so many people have this habit, and it's a very quick win to just go take a crap without your freaking phone. You know, like it's not the end of the world. You used to do it when you were younger, if you're older than like 18, and it wasn't that bad. But now you've trained yourself to be so reliant on the dopamine of social media and whatever that you can't go take a crap without your freaking phone. And that is just such an easy win to cut that out and just sit there. Just train yourself to literally just sit there and not have to have your phone with you.
Yeah. What I like to think is that, going back to the schedule, you've got to defend your schedule like it's attack on your future. Okay? Literally defend it, fight for it. If anyone tries to ring up and say, you're coming down for a drink, or you're coming out, no, I cannot, I will not. So anyone asks you to do a favor, no. Social media goes off, no. It's an attack on your future. Okay? This schedule is there for you to follow in order for you to meet your goals. Yeah? So if you have that mindset, think about that little tip next time you get distracted away from your schedule.
Yeah, an attack on your future. I love that. Yeah. That's a really good frame for that. And it's so true, honestly. Yeah. And I think now's a good time to move to pre-delivery. So you have an interesting take on why pre-delivery inspection will never get you the quality products you need from China and what you actually need to do. So, I mean, a lot of people are concerned about the quality that they get from manufacturers, right? So, like, getting some kind of inspection is something most people do, but you're saying that they shouldn't do this. So what's your advice?
When I came into the Amazon selling world and I saw, how the training courses were proposing to procure products in China, I was horrified, because with the 20 years in manufacturing I've had, being an operations manager, I've managed quality department, production department. I was a product designer, so I know how to specify products. You know, I was thinking, God, we can't be spending and investing this money by just finding a supplier and not even seeing them face to face and then getting a few samples and, you know, following the normal process that most Amazon sellers do. So what I would recommend, and this is what I do, again, you think of this process, this is the lifeblood of your business, your supply chain. You have to get this right, and you have to spend more time than what you would think getting it right. And if you do get it right, it's going to make your life selling on Amazon much easier. You'll have better quality products, better relationship with your supplier. So what I generally do is the first part of the process is the same, finding the suppliers, vetting them, just with emails, getting the samples. But when I get the samples, I do a thorough test program on the samples based upon what I've read about the negative reviews from the competitors' products, and based upon what the functionality of the product's actually supposed to be. I actually test these products to break them. I'll do, for example, put them out in salt water to make sure they're not going to rust. The supplier says they're not going to rust. I don't trust the supplier. I'm going to do my own tests. I'm going to hammer these things to death and I'm going to make sure that they are good products. From there, I'll choose my top three suppliers, and then I actually go and visit the supplier. So I go to China and I go to the factories, do a full factory audit, and I make sure that this supplier has the ability to essentially verify that their specification of the products is correct right through their process. So from goods in, I check their checking, how they check, how they test, through into transportation in the factory, how they package the products, how they move, how they identify the products, through into the production process itself, how they control production. They must test 100% in production, all the documentation that they use, how they train their staff, how the training programs that they use. So I ask to see all this information. And then right through to the packaging process. And if I'm satisfied with the supplier and they have good systems in place, I feel confident that they can deliver me a quality product. And then I will always do what most Amazon sellers will, which I hope they do, is the pre-delivery inspection of my own as well on top of all that. Essentially, that's my process. So it's a lot more involved than I think most sellers would do. And if you can't go to China, I understand people might, you know, can't go to China, perhaps haven't got the experience to do the auditing of the factory, then you need to find someone that can do that for you. But it's all very, very important in getting good quality product. Plus, your supplier is going to know how serious you are, and they will make sure that those products are of high quality.
Yeah, I think that's totally worth buying the plane ticket and going and spending your time doing, right? Because sure, maybe it's going to cost you a few thousand dollars, but you know what else is going to cost you more than a few thousand dollars? If they ship an entire shipment of product that's defective somehow, or they're shipping really good shipments for the first three shipments, but the fourth one has a lot of defects and you got a bunch of one-star reviews. Like, those are the kind of things that can really derail some products on Amazon. So yeah, I mean, like, what does that cost? It's going to cost you a few thousand dollars to fly over to China and get the hotels and go and do that. But at the end of the day, that's cheap insurance if you're starting a brand that you want to grow and actually sell one day.
Yeah, that is the mindset to have, you're right. Plus, you've got to think as well, while you're in China, you're meeting the either you're meeting your rep, or you might, hopefully you're meeting the managers of the company, and you're actually building a rapport with them, a relationship with them. So, you know, when you create your sales agreement with you, with them, they'll be pretty serious about making sure that they deliver what you require. So, and if things go wrong, they're more likely to help you out because you've built that rapport with them, you've been to see them. It does make a big difference. And if you're investing thousands of dollars or more You know, it's just so important to do this stuff.
Yeah, well, I absolutely agree on that. And like also pre-delivery inspections are notorious for taking bribes from manufacturers. So yeah, like these pre-delivery companies will show up and the manufacturing plant is a mess and the product is not going to pass inspection. And then so the company's like, hey, if we just pay you this X amount of money, can you fudge the numbers a little bit? And you're really just putting your trust in these companies. Like some of them are more reputable than others, but I've still heard stories, even from a lot of the most reputable companies that everyone knows in the pre-delivery space, I've still heard stories of these bribes happening and like just like total corruption in what you're paying for. So you might be paying for something that is not even accurate, right?
Yeah. I think you're right, Danny. It's this trust. I think you can develop trust by going and looking in the eyes of your supplier and seeing and asking all the right questions while you're there. I think you just can't do that when you're sitting at your desk on the other side of the world. So,
oh, absolutely. Well, awesome, Dave. This has been a really valuable episode. If people want to reach out to you online or learn more about what you do, where's the best place for them to do so?
Yeah, so I've got a Facebook group focused on building your business to sell. It's called Amazon FBA Build to Sell. So if you just search for that, ask to join the group, get in there and you'll find out all that's happening and hopefully get on the beta package. And you'll get in contact with me in the group. Any questions, just ask them in there. If you want to private message me, that's not a problem about any of the topics I spoke about.
Awesome, Dave. Well, we'll put the link to that Facebook group in the show notes as well at kenjiroy.com/blog. So make sure you guys check that out. And if you have one last piece of advice for someone, if someone is, they have their business going and they just know that it's not in a good place to sell, like what should they start educating themselves about? Or like what would maybe be the first thing that they should look into? Is it like the financials or is it their supply chain? Like what should be the first kind of plan of attack here?
Yeah, well, what you mustn't do is rock up to a broker and think that you're going to get the money that you want for your business. Why would it work like that? You have to understand the process. You have to understand what you need to do in your business, and you have to have actually done it. Every business is different. They're going to have a different action plan depending where they're at in the stage of the business, what type of products they sell, and how you built that business. So there isn't one answer fits all. So I would just advise to find out what you need to do, make a plan, and implement it well before you go to sell, I would say 12 months before.
Awesome, Dave. Well, thank you so much. Definitely go check out that Facebook group, Amazon FBA Built to Sell, and check out the show notes at kenjiroy.com/blog. And if you haven't already, guys, please go leave a review for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It's really difficult to get these reviews, especially if you're on an Android phone, but we made it really easy. So you can go to ratethispodcast.com/free, ratethispodcast.com/FREE, and it just opens up whatever app is on your phone that can leave a review and makes it really easy for you guys. So appreciate it very much. And until next time, guys, go out there and kick some ass.
For show notes and resources mentioned in this episode, visit kenjiroy.com.